keyboard. Our main speaker tonight is John.
Yeah, everyone, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. I first like to thank Ron for throwing my name around, getting coming in here, and Nye for calling me up. He said, everything I have in my life is because I'm a member of AA, and I haven't taken the first drink this time. I've been to AA before this, and everything I have is because I don't drink, and I profess the 12 steps in my life. You know, I was thinking of speak into the mic. How's that? You hear me up there? There you go. I think of love and service when all this stuff was going on. You know, the thing about people coming and when I came here, I like to, first of all, thank God for me being in a suit. You know, that I'm able to do this kind of stuff today. That I have a life that I never knew. That I never thought was possible. From not taking a first drink. You know, when I used to come here, I was introduced to AA in 1968. I was 17 years old. My old man comes out of the West Side in New York. He knew about alcoholism. He knew, like, when I picked up a drink, I came home in the afternoon drunk. I didn't want to drink like that. I didn't want to really be like that. You know, I didn't really understand the ramifications of the sickness. I didn't really understand that there's a phenomenon of craving that starts when you pick up the first drink. You know, some people can get away with it. Alcoholics can't. You know, I was called alcoholic at 16 years old. Parents of the girls that I used to date and run around and go to the parties with and stuff would say, watch John, he drinks too much. You know, at 16, 17, 18. You know, and when I went to St. Ignatius Retreat House, talked to a fellow that was an alcoholic, happened to be a Jesuit priest, and he was leading the Matt Talbot retreat for the weekend. I had no idea what any of that meant. And this guy took me out to dinner in between the break, you know, and he took me for pizza. I didn't particularly care for the guy. I didn't really want to hear too much. I was cynical, sarcastic, you know, had a pair of ratty shorts on and flip-flops. My shirt was tucked in the back pocket. You know, why should I put a shirt on? I'm in a restaurant. You know, and sort of the attitude that I had, you know, and the whole thing about this alcoholism, that it's progressive, you know, and it gets worse. You know, it doesn't get any better. We could try to analyze it. I tried to analyze it. I had many, many, many opportunities in my life, real good job opportunities. I even had scholarships from high school. I didn't even almost make graduate in high school because of alcohol. You know, I did some drugs, too, from pot to narcotics, and I could end up anywhere. I came in here a lot and ended up anywhere, you know. Ended up places that junkyard dogs don't go. Ended up with people that I'm not supposed to be with. You know, things that I did that I still haunt me to this day. But there's a little thing in the big book that says we will not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. When I came to AA, I want to thank Phil and Wilma for their enthusiasm and just for the love of this group, for the Atlantic group, for being who you are, you know, for doing all the good stuff that you do, you know. And without people, I would be a goner. You know, when I ended up the way that I ended up, with all those opportunities and all the goodness and all the nice family, I couldn't stop drinking, you know. I tried like hell not to drink. I tried to figure it out a lot of times. I even went to Silver's Mind Control. I don't know if you ever heard of Silver's Mind Control, but I went there and we hummed. You know, we laid down and we hummed. And then about 11 o'clock, somebody kicked me and said, it's over. You know, I had gone to sleep. You know, because the amphetamine wasn't kicking in then. I used to come in here a lot and things would happen. I remember one time coming out of a complete blackout. Complete, like just all of a sudden I heard my name and I was being slapped, you know, on the back like lovingly by the Hell's Angels. I was with the Hell's Angels in a joint on 7th Street called McSorley's. Some of you probably know of it. It's a quiet little Irish pub, you know. I used to go there quite a bit and come back and not know where I was. I told the guy one time I'd be right back. You know, I had to go get some money. I ran out of money. I lived in Glen Cove at the time. It's about 35 miles from McSorley's. And on the way back there, the police didn't particularly care for me. And they pulled me over, and I had a little Volkswagen. They said I was going 85 on Roslyn Road. I was listening to some REO song or something. It's something about, you know, just like going. I was up for about 3 days, and, you know, I'm just going back to get some money. You know, I'm sucking on a joint and had to eat 10 more amphetamines, you know, and I get thrown into the place and into the Mineola over there, and 5 cop cars came and bats and all that stuff. And the next day I got out and I went home to where I lived. I lived with 5 other guys of the same caliber as me. And I got a little jug of methadone to calm the nerves. You know, you're nervous. Get arrested. You know, so they didn't really ask me where I was for the days, you know. Just took a couple sips of the methadone and finished the jug and stayed in the same chair for about 3 days, you know. But it gets worse, you know. Then it was nice times. It was happy, you know, hey, boogieing, you're boogieing. I come from work one time, and there was illicit stuff going on in the house. Illicit to the fact that if we got caught in there, we'd be in prison for the rest of our lives. And I had to go to the bathroom, and I went upstairs, and I sat down, and a lot of stuff being done downstairs. And I seen these 2 guys walk by with suits on. And from a distance, I could see this red light, like, going around. I said, my God, it's the FBI. You know, and I run downstairs, and I tell everybody, it's the FBI. FBI's outside. Oh, my God, the FBI. And they're starting to, you know, move everything around. And I go, but John, there's no FBI out there. I go back upstairs. Sure enough, there's those guys with the suits again walking by. I said, holy mackerel, the FBI, you know, made a big, big thing. I'm being nice about it now. Go down and they're nuts. The things are flushing and the guns are over here and this is out the door and, you know, got to get the thing, put it in the car. And it was bingo night at the church next door. Bingo night. Alcoholism gets worse. You know? A guy asked me one time, did I want to go out to the Hamptons? I said, yeah, I'd love to go out to the Hamptons. You know, I've been up 4 or 5 days. You know, let me go out there and rest a little. Maybe go, you know, go dancing or something. So we go out to the Hamptons. I don't know nobody but this one guy. He's a chemist at the place where I work. He's studying to be a doctor. He's an intern. He's going to be a doctor. And I went out there, and I remember 4 things. Whole weekend I was out there, 3 days, 4 days. I remember getting kicked out of the club viciously because I pinched Tiny Tim's ass. And then I remember being in a pizza place with 2 big Italian fellas saying, come on, man, let's see how tough you are now. Next thing I remember, I don't know what, I come a complete blackout. I'm 22 years old. I'm in a complete blackout. I got this thing across my chest, and I'm going like this with a fishing pole. And I'm on a charter boat, and I have 4 16-pound bluefish on the line. And I don't know who I went out there with. I don't know where I am. And welcome to the Hamptons. You know? The next thing I remember coming out of another deal, going down the expressway, and somebody said, "Who is this guy?" And I got a load in my pants. And I was wondering who this guy is, too. Like, what the hell happened here? I took one drink. One drink set the whole thing off. When I come to AA, I come a couple times because under duress, you know, maybe I flipped a car or somebody chased me with a machete or come out of a blackout in an after-hours joint, I don't know, with a guy putting a pistol in my mouth. Maybe I got a problem, you know. Maybe it has something to do with the drinking, you know. And I would come here, you know, I'd come to AA. And you're all a little too friendly for me. You know, like, hey, you know, hi. How you doing? Good to see ya. Are you new? Did you read the book today? What? Read the little black book, March 17th. Wear life like a loose garment. You're going to be okay. Got to be kidding me. And I would drink again. And all hell would break loose. You know, those opportunities went to the wayside. You know, after getting arrested that one time, I figured, let me clean up a little bit. And I'll go to Vermont. There's nice women in Vermont. Maybe I'll get married. Buy a farm. You know, raise some sheep. Make some cheese. The only problem was that I brought myself with me. And I couldn't stop drinking. When I left there, everybody was pretty happy that I was leaving. I'm the oldest of six. I didn't live at home since I'm 18, so the sniffing would stop. You know, every time I'd come in, where have you been? What's that in your pocket? What is that thing? You know, some kind of contraption or pipe or something. And now off to Vermont I went. And I ended up in Syracuse, New York. I don't know if you know a map, but that's nowhere near Vermont. And I ended up, I broke my leg getting out of a guy's car, hitchhiking. And I made my way to my sister's house. My sister was a nurse. And her husband worked in physical therapy. And I drank all their liquor and smoked all their pot. And they were annoyed at me. And it continually got worse. I stayed there for 8 months. When I got sober this time, I thought I lived in Vermont for 8 years, you know, because it felt long, you know. It continually got worse, you know, and all the geographics and moving around Long Island, moving around Queens, moving around Suffolk. And I ended up a bum, you know, I couldn't stop. I worked every day, still I was a bum. You know, at this time I got liquid cocaine stolen from a hospital. I was injecting that in my body all day, drinking pints of vodka down my pants, going to work every day. Bizarre. Going to work one day and coming in, not knowing where the car was, got to work by a cab, and I walked in and they just like all looked at me. And I said, "Sorry, I'm late. I think I worked at 8 o'clock, and I was pretty sure I worked there." I went in, I noticed some faces that I knew that I worked there, and they all just looked at me like with sad faces and said, "You're on vacation," you know. And I said, "Oh, I know, I," you know, I parked my car in the parking lot last night. I had a date with a beautiful girl, and We went to the movie, and oh, what a night. And they just, like, looked at me like, you don't have a car. You know? I sold my car, $40 for whiskey on a Saturday morning, so I could drink. I couldn't stop. And it got severely worse, you know. I ended up in a detox, and when I went to that detox, I had 240 over 140 blood pressure. I had the start in the cirrhosis of the liver. They called the browning out of my liver. My body hair had fell off. I had black and blue marks all over me. And I had Vikings in the room swinging swords at me, screaming my name in Arabic. And I didn't understand really what was happening. And I went in, I stayed in, I went home. I couldn't go in that day. And I went home and it got worse. Something happened that day. I didn't drink. I stayed there for several weeks, and when I left there, I kept saying that I'm going to go back to AA, I'm going to go to AA, I'm going to go to AA. And when I left the detox, after several weeks of a five-day detox, I didn't go to rehab because I was a little silly. And years later, I found out that they really thought I was going to die. And I had a spiritual experience in that detox that maybe I could do this. Maybe I'll go to that AA. Maybe I'll get that sponsor. Maybe I'll read that book that they're talking about, them 164 pages. Maybe I could do that. And I left there and I went up to a place that I used to work with, volunteer with Pins Petition Kids. And at this time it was heavily emotional schizophrenic children. And there was a woman out on the field out there. It was my second spiritual experience. And I walked out. I never would have done anything like this. And I extended my hand and told the woman my name, told her I was a chronic alcoholic. I just got out of a detox. What is your husband and children thinking, you working full time? And she just like looked at me like, what? And I asked her on a date. And she said, no, thank you. And I started hanging around with her. I knew people that knew her and all. She didn't know me. I didn't know her. She had known about me. I just left that woman coming here with my friends. And we're married now. We have two beautiful children. I have a beautiful home. I have the respect of myself. I can look in the mirror. And matter of fact, about 2:30 this morning when I got up to visit the bathroom, I told myself I love myself. I said, I love you. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, the first couple months, they told me to go tell yourself you love yourself. You're going to be okay. You happen to look like an Irish Charlie Manson, but you're going to be okay. You know? And we've been married for over 37 years, and she's been with me for the whole time of my sobriety, you know. My kids adore me. I have many, many things in my life. I have many friends. I've done things in sobriety that I didn't know anything about. You know, this love and service thing is really kindness is my life today. And in a split second, I could think it's a good idea to bite your tongue off. So I have to be very, very careful. I was called the most angriest man they ever met in AA. And the deal is because of those steps and because of a higher power, my friend Bill McCarthy told me to throw my boots under the bed. And I was down there again this morning. I asked God to help me not to be self-absorbed and to be a little helpful. And I start to pray. I've learned to pray in here. I found a higher power that I call God. I don't make a big thing out of it. But I know that the only reason why I'm standing here with a pink tie on is God's grace. There's no other reason. And the human touch of the alcoholic before me, that they told me, Johnny, you're going to be okay. Please stay here, man. Don't go nowhere. Read that book. I would get that book and I would go and I couldn't sleep too good, you know, for the first 17 years or something. And I would go over to Pathmark and I would steal porterhouse steaks. And I would come home and I would eat them with my hands, no utensils, because it's faster with your hands. And with the left hand, I would have the big book in my hand reading, Rarely Have We Seen Anyone Fail. And my father would come down and say, "What are you doing?" And I'd have crap all over the front of me. I had a beard down to here and here. And I'd say, "I'm reading the fifth chapter of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They said that it will help me." And he said, "Good." My father and my active addiction told me, and my drinking days told me that I should have never been born. I did the eulogy at my father's wake. My father saw me for many years sober. I caused two nervous breakdowns with my mother. My mother became my best friend. I was able to be there for her when, through the dementia and through all the stuff that she went through. And I was in the room when she died last year, January 8th, on her 94th birthday, that she was telling everybody for 15 years, "I'm going to die on my birthday, January 8th. I'm going to die on my birthday." And she died on her birthday. One time I was bringing her back to the joint where she lived, and I was coming from Seacliff and driving. She was dementia, and she would repeat, you know, a little bit, you know. "Let's go to Oyster Bay for a hot dog. How about going to Oyster Bay for a hot dog? How about going to Oyster Bay for a hot dog? How about going to Oyster Bay for a hot dog?" 720 times. And all of a sudden, she started crying. And I said, "What's the matter?" Thought she got hit by a rock or something. She just looked at me and she started crying. And she said, "I thought you were going to die. But you've turned into such a lovely man, asshole." I like to tell you that I seen all the people raise their hands. I got 14 days back. I got 97 days. I got two weeks. Please stay here, man. Please stay here. I've had friends that were sober many, many, many years that love me dearly. Love my family, love my wife, love my dog, love the whole deal. He drank again. He threatened to kill me and my family. You know, so this deal here is very, very serious. I've had many, many friends die. You know, hang themselves, jump in front of trains, shoot themselves. These are guys that I hung out with, that I knew dearly. This disease, my friend is out there now again, right now. Haven't been seen since Saturday. You know, I could drink again. And the thing is that we have a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. That's why I throw my boots under the bed. That's why I get down. I've done many things in sobriety. And I have very, very joyous, you know, every day really is joyous. And even in that split second, that crap can come back. And why do I have to do this? Or why did this guy say this? I've done things in sobriety. In the beginning of my sobriety, that's not nice. Jumping out of cars and jacking people up and all of that. And I used to call my sponsor. My sponsor would call me and says, "How was your day?" I said, "Really good. Just knocked the guy down with an 80-pound jackhammer." You know, so I got a little nervous. You know, he said, "You really have to look into these steps, man. You know, fourth and fifth step would be a good idea, you know, moral inventory. I don't have no secrets today. I don't have to run nowhere. I don't have to worry about anybody or anything, you know, because of God's grace in you, you know, the people here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because without you, I become alone." Somebody said it before about becoming self-centered. You know, I don't think that would happen to me. Yes, it would, you know, in a split second. My wife said one day, "What's the matter with you? You crazy?" I said, "Crazy? Would you like to see crazy? You see that comforter right there? I will run. I will wrap that comforter around me, and I will run right through that 9-foot glass door." And she said to me, "That would be appropriate for the children to see." You know, lighthearted. And I think, like, where did she come from? Like, she came from you. She came from God's grace, you know, that I don't have to act like that. And I don't most of the time. But in that thing, I still dream, I still nightmare, I still fall out of bed. I still say things you're not supposed to say in your dreams. I come up with my fists to this day, you know. But I wake up peacefully because I get on my knees again and say, please help me, you know. Without saying, please help me, this thing don't work, you know. I got to do this. I got to live these steps. Talk about outlining everything. I sat down and did all that stuff with the pen and the paper. I still do it to this day, you know. Because without doing that, without being self-honest with ourselves, we're going to think something else. It's going to be okay to take that puff of pot. You know, I could take a Valium. I don't really like a Valium. I like 10. You know, 10 every 4 hours. And then after the first 4 hours, you forget the first 10, and then you take 40. You know? And 40 Valium with a quart of vodka is not a good idea. You know, because you bash your face and stuff. So today it's a good idea to stay put in here. You know, you hold the hands and you say, you know, keep coming back. It works if you work, so work, are you worth it? Stay. That's the deal. That we got to stay here no matter how we feel or what's going on. We stay here and we talk to another Alki and we get better. God bless you and thanks for being here.